scenarios. Public health experts agree that Carrasco's experiments with frog and chicken embryos are not predictive of health effects in humans or wildlife, the company said in a posting on its website. Regulatory authorities and independent experts agree that glyphosate does not cause adverse reproductive effects in adult animals or birth defects in offspring of these adults exposed to glyphosate, even at doses far higher than relevant environmental or occupational exposure. At the time, Carrasco was generally well regarded. Not only was he a neuroscientist at the University of Buenos Aires with expertise in embryonic development, but he was also head of the research department at the Ministry of Defense and principal investigator and past president of the National Scientific and Technical Research Council, CONICET, a highly respected Argentine research institute. In part because of the high regard for Carrasco's work and the troubling nature of his findings, a group of environmental lawyers filed a petition with the Supreme Court of Argentina seeking a ban on glyphosate, and the Ministry of Defense announced a ban on glyphosate use on some of its land that was used for agricultural production. Activists and others who had long been convinced that agrochemicals were to blame for health problems in their communities rallied around the scientist. But Carrasco also quickly found himself with multiple enemies after he went public with his work on glyphosate. The Chamber of Agricultural Health and Fertilizers, CASAFE, which represents Monsanto and the other agrochemical industry interests in Argentina, sent representatives to visit Carrasco's laboratory looking for documents related to his research, the scientist told the press. The scientist also reported receiving anonymous threatening phone calls, and he and a group of activists were reportedly physically attacked at an August 2010 gathering in the small farming town of La Leonesa, where Carrasco was scheduled to speak about his glyphosate study. Press accounts said Carrasco and a colleague locked themselves inside a car as an angry mob yelled threats and beat on the vehicle. The Minister of Science, Technology, and Productive Innovation, Lino Baranhão, considered a chief government supporter of Monsanto, discounted Carrasco's findings and criticized him for sharing his results with news outlets before they were published in the peer-reviewed scientific journal Chemical Research and Toxicology a year and a half later. When Carrasco died from an extended illness at the age of 67 in May 2014, he was described in the press as one of Monsanto's most difficult public relations problems. Javier Souza, a regional coordinator for the Pesticide Action Network in Latin America, said that despite the questions raised about glyphosate by Carrasco and others, the power and prestige of the agrochemical companies combined to keep the chemical in common use. The concerns are very great, he said. There is increasing evidence on the possible effect of glyphosate on health, yet both business and family producers are increasingly using it. A group of 15 Argentine farmers and their 8 children tried to take their concerns about Roundup-related health problems to court in February 2012, suing Monsanto and other companies over allegations that the farmers' use of Roundup and other glyphosate-based herbicides in growing tobacco on their family farms had caused birth defects in their children. The farmers would mix and spray the pesticides from applicators they carried on their backs, and they often were accompanied in the fields by their spouses. Although at the time they thought they were handling one of the safest chemicals available in agriculture, they now believe their exposure to the weed killer caused their children to suffer a range of problems, including spina bifida. Not only were they exposed when they applied the herbicides, but the chemical also contaminated the farmers' non-tobacco crops, water wells, and streams, they claimed. Monsanto has marketed glyphosate as posing little or no risk to human or environmental health, when in fact Monsanto knew or had reason to know that aforementioned herbicide is a reproductive toxin, teratogenic, genotoxic, and otherwise harmful, the farmers claimed. They said they were encouraged by Monsanto to use large amounts of the weed killer, frequently and in quantities beyond what would be necessary for effective weed control. Defendants did this purely to increase profit. The farmers tried to pursue their lawsuit in the United States, but a Delaware judge dismissed the suit in November 2015, saying the claims were too vague and giving the farmers an option to amend their complaints against Monsanto. The farmers then refiled in January 2016 and have continued to press their claims. The United States government has been no idle observer of the angst in Argentina. Indeed, the U.S. Embassy in Buenos Aires kept a close eye on the developments, reporting updates to the U.S. Secretary of State, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and others as Argentina wrestled with what, if anything, to do about the pesticide concerns. Cables obtained and released by WikiLeaks provide some hints of the level of the embassy's interest and action, and demonstrate in many cases that U.S. officials were eager to promote and sustain the use of glyphosate. In one cable dated May 7, 2009, shortly after Carrasco's research came to light, the embassy wrote that the campaign against the use of glyphosate appeared to be driven more by local politics than health concerns. The embassy called Carrasco's findings unverified and said that while both the Ministry of Defense and the Ministry of Health were expressing concerns about glyphosate, the National Service of Health and Agri-Food Quality, SENASA, and the Ministry of Science, Technology, and Productive Innovation were defending glyphosate's use. The embassy said Monsanto had the largest share of glyphosate market in Argentina, estimated at 40%, making the company the most prominent and vulnerable victim of the attacks on glyphosate. The embassy said it was providing information to SENASA as it built a case for continued glyphosate use in Argentina. The embassy concluded that it was unlikely the country would implement a ban on glyphosate because the economic impact could be substantial, with soybean production estimated to drop by 20% without glyphosate to help control weeds. The cable concluded with a note reassuring U.S. agencies that Argentine support for biotech seeds and for glyphosate was unlikely to be disrupted. Too much money was at stake. Argentina has long been an ally of the United States with respect to biotechnology promotion in various international negotiations, and Roundup Ready biotech soybeans are Argentina's most important export crop. Post contacts within the Secretariat of Agriculture assure us that Argentina will continue to support biotechnology, and none of our contacts believe that the GOA will go so far as to ban the use of glyphosate or Roundup Ready soybeans. The United States had good reason to support the notion that glyphosate use in South America was safe. Not only were sales of glyphosate worth billions of dollars to U.S.-based Monsanto, but also, starting in the year 2000, glyphosate had been a key tool in a program promoted by the U.S. government to fight the South American drug trade. U.S. officials believed glyphosate, sprayed either from the ground or from the air, was an effective way to wipe out crops of opium poppy, used to make heroin, and coca crops, used for cocaine. Colombia was a key target for the mission. Members of Congress worried that Plan Colombia could jeopardize the health of people living in sprayed regions, as well as damage the environment. But other U.S. leaders saw the program as an effective way to remove a lucrative source of income from Colombian drug groups. The U.S. Department of State reassured those who were worried about glyphosate, reporting that the EPA had found that there is no evidence of significant human health or environmental risks from the spraying in Colombia. Under the program, the United States provided technical and scientific advice, the glyphosate herbicide, fuel, spray aircraft, and a limited number of escort helicopters. The actual spray aircraft were piloted by either U.S. citizens, Colombians, or third country national contractors. The U.S. government hoped for the same arrangement in Peru, but government officials there would not agree. The aerial spraying in Colombia also did not sit well with officials in neighboring Ecuador, who claimed glyphosate drifted across the border the country's share, harming hundreds of people who were exposed to the pesticide. An Ecuadorian commission issued a report in 2007 that said the herbicide mixture used in the Columbia spraying was highly toxic and was causing health and environmental damage. The country asked for limits on spraying close to its border and for financial compensation for the people impacted. The U.S. Embassy publicly appeared to stay clear of the dispute between the two countries, but privately, embassy personnel expressed their belief that glyphosate is safe and encouraged the government in Ecuador to consider that other factors might be to blame for the health and environmental problems it was attributing to glyphosate. Ecuador did not back down, however, and in 2013, Colombia agreed to pay $15 million to settle a lawsuit filed by Ecuador for human and economic damage caused by the Colombian spraying of glyphosate. Colombia suspended the glyphosate fumigations in 2015 because of the mounting evidence of health and environmental dangers, including fears the aerial spraying might be putting people at risk for cancer. The decision came after IARC's classification that glyphosate was a probable human carcinogen. U.S. officials pressed the Colombian government to continue the program, and by early 2017, the government had resumed the use of glyphosate, using workers to spray the chemical on the ground by hand rather than from the air. The diplomatic interest in the glyphosate debates in Argentina, Colombia, and Ecuador are only a few examples of a much broader program under which U.S. taxpayers have been footing the bill for overseas lobbying of the products developed by Monsanto and other seed and agrochemical makers. There are hundreds of diplomatic cables between the U.S. State Department and embassies in more than 100 countries that show State Department officials as active promoters of the types of GMO soy, corn, and cotton that took over Argentine agriculture. Expanded use of those glyphosate-tolerant crops meant more use of glyphosate and higher sales for companies producing the chemical. The cables show that U.S. officials often worked to quash any public criticism of the technology, the chemicals, and the companies, such as Monsanto, selling the products. The cables also show the U.S. diplomats supported Monsanto's work abroad, even after the company was charged with bribing an Indonesian official and violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act in 2005. Monsanto ultimately paid a $1.5 million fine in that case. One 2009 cable showed that the U.S. Embassy in Spain sought high-level U.S. government intervention at the urgent requests of Monsanto to combat biotech crop opponents there. The cables also reveal that State Department officials instructed embassies to troubleshoot problematic legislation related to biotech crops and to encourage the development and commercialization of ag biotech products. The State Department also produced pamphlets promoting GMOs in Slovenia, sent pro-GMO industry DVDs to high schools in Hong Kong, and helped bring foreign officials and media from 17 countries to the United States to promote biotech agriculture. The details contained in the cables deepened suspicions that the U.S. government does more to promote global acceptance of biotech crops than to protect the public from harm. I believe that our government is more interested in pushing ag biotech interests than looking objectively at independent science data that shows the potential harmful effects, said Pam Larry, a U.S. activist who has called for more scrutiny of GMOs and glyphosate. Why is it that our tax dollars are being used to force countries and their citizens to use and consume products they don't want from an industry that's poisoning the planet? Another South American country caught up in controversy over glyphosate is Paraguay, which borders Argentina to the north. As in Argentina, Paraguay's landscape has been transformed as it became a leading supplier of GMO glyphosate-tolerant soy. Aerial spraying of farm fields with glyphosate and other chemicals has forced many people from their villages and raised health concerns like those seen in Argentina. People living near the farm fields have complained that their rivers have become contaminated with the pesticides used on the soybeans, and they have reported rising rates of birth defects in their children. Farmers have found it hard to grow anything but the glyphosate-tolerant soy because other crops die if they come in contact with the herbicide, which drifts from field to field. For Judy Hatcher, who served as co-leader of the International Pesticide Action Network and as executive director of the North American arm of the organization for 5 years until June 2017, the U.S. government's work to promote pesticide products enriches powerful corporations such as Monsanto at the expense of poor and vulnerable populations. Time and time again, global pesticide corporations have exerted far too much influence over government policy, said Hatcher. Family farmers around the world are demanding the right to good health, not more exposure to hazardous pesticides, and are looking for greater control over their lives, seeds, farms, and livelihoods, not locked into Monsanto's model. Chapter 9. Uproar in Europe. To some, the suggestion seemed more than a little unusual. Members of the European Parliament, who were deep into a debate over the risks and rewards of glyphosate in the spring of 2016, should take a close look inside themselves before voting on whether or not to ban the controversial pesticide. Literally. The Green Party, whose platform backs environmentally sustainable policies, pushed the idea of a P-test, as the press call it, in hopes of demonstrating the pervasiveness of the chemical's reach and underscoring the very real personal implication of the political decisions being debated. Though some dismissed the idea as a political stunt, a pissing contest, 48 of the 751 parliament members agreed to submit their urine for scrutiny by researchers at BioCheck, a diagnostic laboratory located in the German city of Leipzig, Saxony. They handed over their samples in April and awaited the results, though not necessarily with eagerness. At the time, the battle brewing over glyphosate was at a fevered pitch. The European Commission was preparing to approve a new 15-year authorization for glyphosate before the June 2016 expiration of the current license. But several European Union EU members were mounting fierce opposition to the plan as people across Europe protested reauthorization. The French National League Against Cancer, La Ligue Nationale Contre le Cancer, started a petition drive seeking a ban, and a Belgian organization of medical and public health professionals known as the Health and Environment Alliance, HEAL, also weighed in to demand a ban, urging European cancer societies to take a similar stand. Supporters of a ban were worried not only about ties the chemical might have to cancer, but also about reported associations with birth defects, Parkinson's disease, and other ailments, as well as damage to the environment. In response, the European Parliament passed a resolution suggesting that glyphosate not be approved for any longer than 7 years and not be used at all in public places such as parks and playgrounds. The resolution cited concerns about cancer and endocrine disruption and said that the practice of spraying glyphosate on crops shortly before harvest to ripen them was unacceptable because it increased human exposure. The members of the European Parliament, who are commonly referred to simply as MEPs, called on the European Commission to invoke the precautionary principle before making a final decision on whether or not to keep glyphosate products on the market. The idea of a precautionary principle took root in the 1980s in Germany, taking on global significance when included in a 1992 declaration made as part of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. The precautionary principle states that where there are threats of serious or irreversible damage, lack of full scientific certainty shall not be used as a reason for postponing cost-effective measures to prevent environmental degradation. The political divide would grow even wider as the two bodies, which act as parts of the legislative branch for the 28 countries that make up the EU, wrestled over concerns about the weed killer. Those who stepped up to speak out against continued glyphosate use cited the cancer classification made by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, and said the evidence of health risks was undeniable, far outweighing any benefits that made the chemical popular with many European farmers. Even though genetically modified crops are cultivated on only a tiny fraction of European farmland, primarily a small amount of GMO corn acreage in Spain, Roundup herbicide and other glyphosate weed killers have been a mainstay on conventional, non-organic farms for decades, mainly because they were considered so much safer than other herbicides and because they worked so well. In fact, while glyphosate was beloved by European farmers, the GMO crops developed to be used with glyphosate were another matter. Europeans never embraced the new high-tech tinkering with plant DNA. Wariness was so widespread that several countries banned any planting of them, including Austria, Poland, Hungary, Greece, and Germany. And shortly after they were introduced in the United States, European nations also tried to block any importing of GMO crops and products because of fears that the crops could be unsafe for people and the environment. The United States spent years railing against Europe's reluctance to embrace GMOs. In 2003, U.S. officials brought a complaint with the World Trade Organization, arguing that the European communities were violating international trade rules by effectively implementing a moratorium on imports of the specialty crops. The ban translated to substantial monetary losses for U.S. interests, of course, as American farmers were the largest producers of GMO crops, and U.S.-based Monsanto Company was the prime GMO developer. The U.S. Department of State asserted that as of 2002, lost sales of GMO corn and soy products amounted to at least $300 million. President George W. Bush took the complaint even further, declaring that the losses went beyond financial concerns and into the humanitarian realm. The Europeans who were thumbing their noses at the modern scientific magic of genetically engineered crops were actually contributing to starvation in Africa, he said. Our partners in Europe have blocked all new biocrops because of unfounded, unscientific fears. This has caused many African nations to avoid investing in biotechnologies for fear that their products will be shut out of European markets, Bush said in a 2003 speech. European governments should join, not hinder, the great cause of ending hunger in Africa. The World Trade Organization ultimately agreed with the United States, and with Canada and Argentina, which raised similar complaints, the EU was ordered by world trade authorities to lift the ban. With all the sparring over GMOs, worries about glyphosate were mostly sidelined for many years. A handful of outlier scientists and environmentalists kept tabs on the spread of the chemical, but few others paid attention. French scientist Gilles-Éric Séralini stirred global controversy with his findings that GMOs and glyphosate caused a range of health problems in rats. But for the most part, many scientists toiled away on obscure research studies that got little to no attention until the mounting evidence of troubling ties to cancer and other illnesses became impossible to ignore. By the spring of 2016, when the MEPs submitted their own urine for glyphosate testing, worries about the weed killer had matched or surpassed the fears associated with GMOs. The links to cancer, as confirmed by IARC's review of several different research studies, made for more risk than many Europeans were willing to accept. Polls showed that two-thirds of Europeans supported a ban on glyphosate, including 75% of Italians, 60% of the French, and 56% of Britons. Testing for glyphosate in urine, foods, and beverages was fairly widespread in Europe by that time, but interest had been growing for years as people wondered how much, if any, of the weed killer was making its way into their bodies. In 2012, Séralini and six other French scientists undertook a study aimed at measuring levels of glyphosate in farmers' urine. The scientists examined a farm family in which two of the family's three children had been born with birth defects. The farmer routinely used a hand sprayer to treat portions of his three fields and a tractor for others. The children were rarely in the fields. The scientists collected the farmer's urine for 24 hours the day before he sprayed and for 2 days after, and found that glyphosate was easily detected in the father's urine. There were also detectable levels of glyphosate in the urine of one of the farmer's three children, even though the family lived about a mile away from the field and the child did not help in the weed killer application. The scientists speculated that the child's exposure could be due to prolonged contact with his father, but the farmer thought this was inconceivable given the distance between their home and the fields. As it turns out, glyphosate doesn't show up only in the urine of farmers. A survey commissioned in 2013 by the advocacy group Friends of the Earth Europe found that people in 18 countries across the continent had traces of glyphosate in their urine. Just how the chemical was making its way into people's bodies wasn't certain, but tests were also finding glyphosate residues in many types of foods, particularly bread made from wheat that had been sprayed with glyphosate shortly before harvest. In Britain, the slogan, "Not in our bread," became a rallying cry when the Soil Association, the country's leading organic certification organization, said that glyphosate residues had been detected in close to one-third of all samples of British bread, and that glyphosate had been found to be a regular contaminant of bread products in routine tests by independent food safety experts. For whole grain products, the residue contamination was much higher, seen in almost two-thirds of the bread products. If glyphosate ends up in bread, it's impossible for people to avoid it, said Peter Melchett, policy director of the Soil Association. So it was perhaps little surprise then when the results of the MEP's urine test were announced in May 2016. Every single parliament member who participated had tested positive for glyphosate. And, making matters worse, the pesticide was present at levels far higher than some expected. The laboratory said the average rate of glyphosate found in the MEP's urine was 1.7 micrograms per liter, an amount that is roughly 17 times the permitted level of glyphosate in European drinking water. The lowest level found among the group was 0.17 nanogram per milliliter, NG/ml, almost double the safe level, the Green Party said when it announced the results. Jean Lambert, a member of the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee, described the results as frightening. Her personal test results showed a glyphosate level of 0.67 NG/ml. It is genuinely frightening that glyphosate is everywhere in our everyday lives, Lambert said. These test results show no matter where we live, what we eat, or our age, we cannot escape exposure to this toxic substance. With glyphosate widely used in cities, in urban parks and public spaces, on streets and pavements, the European Commission must bow to public pressure and put the safety of people and the environment ahead of the profits of chemical industry giants. Green Party members announced the results publicly. Using the social media hashtag, #MEP, and the slogan, "Let's keep pea glyphosate free." MEP Mark Tarabella told the local press, "The results of this milestone research should force the public and manufacturers alike to acknowledge that the omnipresence of a potential carcinogenic and suspect substance, such as glyphosate, constitutes a phenomenal problem." The findings, added to similar study results published a month earlier after the Heinrich Böll Foundation, which describes its mission in part as defending the freedom of individuals against excessive state and economic power, looked at samples of urine from more than 2,000 people living in Germany. That result found levels of the herbicide in 99.6% of participants and found that roughly 75% of the people who gave samples had five times the amount of glyphosate in their urine than was legally allowed in drinking water. Children, particularly those raised on farms, had the most significant levels, the study found. The German Environment Agency, known as Umweltbundesamt, UBA, in its home country, also has looked at the glyphosate issue, conducting an analysis of urine in students over more than a decade. The results showed the presence of the weed killer in roughly 40% of students sampled in 2015, up from roughly 10% in 2000, with spikes as high as almost 60% in 2012 and 2013. The UBA's president, Maria Kratzberger, said the signs that glyphosate is so pervasive that it commonly passes through children and adults, rural and city dwellers alike, should trigger more safety research and a cautionary approach to its use and regulation. But Germany's Federal Institute for Risk Assessment, known to Germans as the Bundesinstitut für Risikobewertung, BFR, had a different response. The BFR discounted the significance of glyphosate in urine, saying that the chemical is excreted out of the body rapidly and is not at all harmful. In other words, having a little of the pesticide in one's pee was nothing to worry about. In our opinion, these very low levels are to be expected, since glyphosate is an approved active substance contained in plant protection products, meaning that residues could be expected to be ingested with the food and hence excreted. The BFR's president, Professor Andreas Hensel, said after the Heinrich Böll Foundation's study results were released. The BFR claimed the study had major flaws, including what the BFR said was a perceived lack of proper handling of the samples. And the group said that while the levels may seem high, when calculated in the context of how much would be consumed, it was far less than the acceptable daily intake, ADI, set by regulators. No adverse health effects are to be expected from glyphosate residues ingested with food, the agency said. The BFR also maintains that glyphosate does not cause cancer. Its own assessments show that, according to current scientific knowledge, no carcinogenic risk is to be expected if the substance is used correctly and in line with its intended purpose, the BFR states on its website. Confused? Determining who is right and who is wrong when it comes to glyphosate has been just as difficult in Europe as it has been in the United States. Activists say there is a simple explanation, just as in the United States. The companies that sell glyphosate have wielded influence with a heavy hand. And just as the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, relies heavily on the industry's own studies for its safety determinations, so too do regulators in Europe. Take the BFR, for example. The BFR operates as a scientifically independent institution within the portfolio of the Federal Ministry of Food and Agriculture, BMEL, in Germany, but questions about just how independent the institution really is would come to cloud its work on glyphosate. The BFR's job is to advise the government on questions of food, chemical, and product safety, and it was a key advisor to the European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, when the agency reviewed glyphosate ahead of its expiration in 2016 and the bid for reauthorization. Not only did the European Commission want EFSA's recommendation about whether or not glyphosate should remain on the market, but also EU member states were relying on the agency to help them address safety questions about glyphosate products used in their territories. After the World Health Organization's IARC team of cancer scientists classified glyphosate as a probable human carcinogen in March 2015, the European Commission asked EFSA to give special consideration to those findings, to see if there really were cancer risks Europeans might need to be protected from. And EFSA turned to the BFR to help analyze IARC's work. The BFR did its advisory job thoroughly, drafting a detailed report that provided the basis for EFSA to declare in November 2015 that IARC was flat-out wrong about glyphosate's ties to cancer. In fact, EFSA claimed evidence showed that glyphosate was actually unlikely to pose a carcinogenic hazard to humans. EFSA said it had looked at more information than IARC had, and it was so satisfied with the chemical's safety that it also advised raising the allowed amount of glyphosate residue in food, saying the ADI level should nearly double, from 0.3 milligram per kilogram, mg/kg, of body weight per day, to 0.5 mg/kg per day. And those urine tests? EFSA has reassuring words for anyone worried about what the weed killer might be doing to their bodies. The safety agency said that absorbed glyphosate is poorly metabolized, widely distributed in the body, and is rapidly eliminated, showing no potential for bioaccumulation. Jose Tarazona, head of EFSA's pesticides unit, said the conclusions followed an exhaustive process, a full assessment that has taken into account a wealth of new studies and data. What Tarazona did not say publicly was that EFSA's conclusions also came after the EPA's Jess Rowland, the official who Monsanto considered a reliable friend inside the agency, engaged in a teleconference with EFSA in September 2015, explaining why EFSA should reject a 2001 study that found a causal link between glyphosate exposure and tumors in Swiss albino mice. Records show the agency did exactly that. It was that same month, in an email dated September 3, 2015, that Monsanto's regulatory affairs leader, Dan Jenkins, wrote to colleagues how useful Rowland could be in ongoing glyphosate defense. EFSA said there was no industry attempt to improperly influence its assessment of glyphosate, but skeptics were not satisfied. Monsanto, which stood to lose an estimated $100 million in sales if its license for glyphosate were not renewed in Europe, applauded the BFR's and EFSA's safety findings. EFSA's conclusions, which came 8 months after IARC said glyphosate was probably carcinogenic, provided much-needed ammunition for Monsanto and the other chemical companies as they headed into 2016, when glyphosate's registration would expire and the European Commission would be deciding about reauthorization. The BFR and EFSA were so enthusiastic about glyphosate safety that they sent representatives to the United States in December 2016 to appear before the EPA's Scientific Advisory Panel on glyphosate and tell the group how safe both agencies found glyphosate to be. The EPA did not request that either EFSA or the BFR appear. Instead, the agencies themselves said they decided to travel across the ocean to make their arguments. So where did the BFR get the data for its report to EFSA? From none other than the Glyphosate Task Force, a consortium of chemical companies, including Monsanto, that had joined forces with the stated goal of winning renewal of glyphosate's registration in Europe. The BFR acknowledged as much, saying the health evaluation prepared for glyphosate was based on publications and other relevant information submitted by the industry consortium, as well as on older studies that were part of previous EU evaluations. The BFR also claimed that because so many studies were submitted, it was unable to look at them all in detail, so it relied on the industry consortium, descriptions, and assessments of the studies rather than going through each independently. The revelation outraged some who saw the circumstances as a blatant example of industry interests taking precedence over protection of public safety. Greenpeace called EFSA's report a whitewash that relied heavily on unpublished studies commissioned by glyphosate producers, while dismissing published peer-reviewed evidence that glyphosate causes cancer. EFSA has defied the world's most authoritative cancer agency in order to please corporations like Monsanto, said Greenpeace EU's food policy director, Franziska Achterberg. Other environmental and consumer groups also complained that the findings lacked independent scrutiny. We know that Monsanto and other companies provided their own assessment of the scientific evidence, much of it industry-sponsored unpublished studies, and then handed that pig off to Germany for some lipstick, said Jennifer Sass, a senior scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council. That industry-dominated finding of unlikely cancer ties should be discounted because its credibility was too compromised, she said. A group of 96 scientists, including some members of IARC's panel, penned a critical letter to the EU's Commissioner for Health and Food Safety, a man named Vytenis Andriukaitis, imploring the European Commission to disregard the flawed EFSA finding on glyphosate, and to call for a transparent, open, and credible review of the scientific literature. The scientists, who hailed from several countries including New Zealand, Australia, Germany, Switzerland, France, Italy, Russia, and the United States, said that IARC's decision was the truly credible one because it relied on open and transparent procedures by independent scientists who completed thorough conflict of interest statements and were not affiliated or financially supported in any way by the chemical manufacturing industry. In contrast, the scientists wrote, the BFR's and EFSA's work is not credible because it is not supported by the evidence and it was not reached in an open and transparent manner. Among other problems, the scientists said, it appeared that EFSA was disregarding significant positive trend findings in animal studies that showed links between glyphosate and tumors in mice and rats, that it was differing from standard scientific practices, and that it was ignoring unequivocal evidence of the carcinogenicity of glyphosate in laboratory animals. And particularly troubling to the scientists was the lack of information about unpublished studies the government agencies seemed to be relying on. The criticisms of the European regulators were nearly identical to those lobbed at the EPA. Due to the potential public health implications of this extensively used pesticide, it is essential that all scientific evidence be freely available, reviewed openly in an objective manner, and that financial support, conflicts of interest, and affiliations of authors be fully disclosed, the scientists wrote. One of the signatories, Zavar Bauer, senior professor at the Charité Institute of Occupational Medicine in Berlin, made a detailed presentation to the European Parliament, stressing the research tying glyphosate to rising rates of non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and describing the various other cancers and disorders his clinic sees in farmers and agricultural workers exposed to glyphosate and other pesticides. He said there are potential parallels between the glyphosate situation and that of asbestos, which chemical industry players defended for decades, despite what became overwhelming evidence of asbestos's ties to lung cancer. Precaution is strongly recommended, he told the gathering, saying the cumulative impacts of exposure through food and the environment are currently unknown. Glyphosate and its formulations represent a new potentially hazardous internal load to the human body, and the health risk is incalculable at present. Such widespread skepticism led to demand for consumer advocates for MEPs for EFSA to release the actual unpublished studies provided by Monsanto and other industry players to show glyphosate was not cancer-causing. The hope was that by looking at the studies themselves, rather than the industry-aided interpretation, outsiders could determine whether or not EFSA's assessment was accurate. A group called Corporate Europe Observatory, a watchdog organization that tracks corporate lobbying in the EU, was among those seeking the studies. The group said that clinical trial data for new medicines is routinely made public to enable scientific scrutiny, and the same should be done for agrochemicals such as glyphosate. Similar requests had been made over the years to other global regulatory authorities, which commonly cited business confidentiality restrictions imposed by the industry in refusing to make the data public. The studies were trade secrets, according to Monsanto, even though they were used in multiple countries to seek approvals for products sold to and used by the public. A chink was notched into the argument's armor in 2013 when the Court of Justice of the European Union ruled on a legal complaint filed by environmental groups that challenged the secrecy over glyphosate. The court ordered that any document containing information about emissions into the environment needed to be released to the public. The ruling made it difficult for EFSA to keep the data secret, but the agency still showed reluctance to full disclosure. Email communications obtained through public access requests in Europe showed that EFSA went to Monsanto and the other pesticide companies who owned the relevant studies to seek permission to release certain documents, including a feeding study of mice that had been dosed with glyphosate. As was expected, the companies objected to the disclosures. Monsanto was adamantly opposed to letting members of the public view its research results and analysis, arguing that its work represented intellectual property and such information could aid competitors by supplying them with key commercial information. The company underlined some of its objections in a letter to EFSA. The following are a few excerpts. Monsanto hereby formally objects to the disclosure of the entirety of the study. Our objections are also grounded by legitimate economic interests protected by the confidentiality. The study represents a material investment in time and money for Monsanto. Should EFSA still consider granting access to the document to the third party, Monsanto would insist on making the study available to the third party in a closed data room, without any possibility to make copies, reproduction or communication of the information, and under logistical conditions to be agreed with Monsanto. Prior to the third party viewing the study, Monsanto would request an opportunity to sanitize the study. Despite Monsanto's objections, the political pressure on EFSA would eventually force the agency to release the raw data, sending the genotoxicity and carcinogenicity studies it used in its assessment to a group of MEPs who had submitted a formal request for the information. Before sharing it, however, EFSA blacked out numerous sections, saying it had to balance the public's right to know with its obligations to protect commercially sensitive information. Industry influence also colored a report from another group that weighed in to support glyphosate. This group of 18 scientists, officially known as the Joint FAO-WHO Meeting on Pesticide Residues, JMPR, made their analysis as part of a program administered by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, and the World Health Organization, WHO. They were generally considered to be experts in their fields and independent of industry influence, but the group that was called to meet in Geneva, Switzerland, in May 2016 to review IARC's work on glyphosate did not exactly meet the latter standard. The JMPR group included several scientists who were members of or who worked for the chemical industry. There was little surprise when the JMPR scientists declared that, like EFSA's, their review determined that glyphosate was probably not carcinogenic to humans. But there was plenty of condemnation. There is a clear conflict of interest here if the review of the safety of glyphosate is carried out by scientists that directly get money from industry, said Vito Buonsante, an attorney with the nonprofit environmental law group, Client Earth. The complaints about the chemical and the secretive studies behind the regulatory approval were so unrelenting in early 2016 that the European Commission, which was planning a vote on glyphosate's reauthorization for March, found itself facing what the Guardian newspaper dubbed a mutiny. The French Agency for Food, Environmental, and Occupational Health and Safety, ANSES, was among those leading the revolt, issuing a report in February that contradicted EFSA, saying that its own assessment of the research showed glyphosate could arguably be classified as suspected of being carcinogenic to humans. ANSES said there were serious concerns not just about glyphosate, but also about the other chemicals, the coformulants, used along with it in herbicide products. The French agency said it was launching a new review of glyphosate and polyethoxylated tallowamine, POEA, combinations. And it called on the European Chemicals Agency, ECHA, in Helsinki, Finland, to step in to review the research on glyphosate. Government representatives from the Netherlands also called for any relicensing to be put on hold until completion of ECHA's evaluation. Italy and Sweden joined forces with France and the Netherlands in a show of opposition that was sufficient to convince the European Commission to postpone the March vote until May. But opposition only grew stronger, and that vote was again postponed when Germany said it would abstain from voting because of a divide within its ruling coalition. The dissent left the European Commission without a majority needed to either relicense or ban the chemical. By the end of June, just days before the authorization for glyphosate was to expire, the European Commission said it would postpone any decision on glyphosate for at least a year. granting an 18-month extension for glyphosate products while authorities awaited the results of the new evaluation. During the extension, glyphosate use should be minimized on playgrounds and in parks, the EU member states decided. Amid the uproar, the Germany-based chemical conglomerate Bayer AG made a takeover bid for Monsanto, an overture that eventually would lead to a $66 billion proposed deal, which is still pending as of this writing. And angry Europeans organized a citizens' initiative seeking a ban on glyphosate. By early 2017, European uncertainty regarding glyphosate safety had only grown deeper. ECHA announced in March that after reviewing extensive scientific data, it had concluded glyphosate should not be classified as a carcinogen, and it said it took into consideration both published studies and the original reports of studies conducted by industry. That failed to reassure many MEPs, however, and in April 2017, 30 of them penned a letter to the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, questioning the trustworthiness of the data relied on by regulators to vouch for glyphosate safety. They cited the internal Monsanto documents revealed through the U.S. cancer lawsuits as cause for alarm. The group was particularly upset about Monsanto communications that discussed ghostwriting research and the fact that at least one study that regulators trusted appeared to have been authored by a scientist who Monsanto had recruited and paid specifically to attach added credibility to the work. The MEPs also pointed to internal company documents that surfaced in the court case, showing the company wrestling with how to handle genotoxicity concerns about glyphosate and Roundup. The corporate records showed that in the late 1990s, the company was very worried about scientific research indicating that Roundup was genotoxic, including a mouse study by Italian scientists published in 1997 that saw DNA damage in the livers and kidneys of animals treated with the weed killer. Despite the many positive aspects of glyphosate use, there are some data that indicate its technical formulation, Roundup, is a potential toxic agent. The formulated commercial product, Roundup, seems to be rather more toxic than the parent compound, the scientists concluded. To try to beat back growing concerns about its herbicide, in 1999, Monsanto brought in a genotoxicity expert named James Perry, an authority in the field of mutagenicity in the United Kingdom, to lend his opinion. After reviewing both published studies on glyphosate and Monsanto's unpublished in-house studies, Perry did not deliver the resoundingly positive findings Monsanto had hoped for. Instead, he concluded that glyphosate showed at least some potential to be genotoxic, damaging to human health. Perry recommended that Monsanto undertake additional tests. But rather than follow Perry's advice, Monsanto executives declared they would not do such studies and discussed finding another expert to dig them out of a genotoxic hole. Executives questioned whether Perry had ever worked with industry before. In one internal email, Monsanto scientist William Haydens wrote, "We want to find, develop someone who is comfortable with the genotoxic profile of glyphosate Roundup and who can be influential with regulators and scientific outreach operations when genotox issues arise. My read is that Perry is not currently such a person, and it would take quite some time and money/studies to get him there. Even if we think we can eventually bring Perry around closer to where we need him, we should be currently looking for a second/backup genotox supporter. We have not made much progress and are currently very vulnerable in this area. We have time to fix that, but only if we make this a high priority now." As well, the documents revealed that for many years, Monsanto employed a Belgian toxicology expert named Mark Martens to advise the Belgian government and the EU on pesticide registration issues and provide a toxicology defense of Monsanto products in the EU. Monsanto would later recognize Martens for working to protect Monsanto's bottom line and for the development of data to gain key EU scientific support that reported genotoxicity of Roundup herbicide was due to secondary consequences unrelated to glyphosate thereby preventing adverse effect on Roundup business. The revelations in the emails worried the MEPs enough that they urged Juncker to fully investigate whether Monsanto has deliberately falsified studies on the safety of glyphosate, and to set up a blacklist of the companies which use lies as a common policy. The MEPs also asked for a ban on undisclosed contacts between European Commission officials and any Monsanto lobbyists. Juncker dismissed the MEPs' concerns and said there was no reason to question the regulatory assessments of safety. As of this writing, the European Commission was proposing to reauthorize glyphosate for 10 years, even as critics argued that doubts about the chemical safety should not be ignored. In Italy, a country known for its wine and pasta, the battle over glyphosate, or glifosato, as the Italians call the chemical, is as passionate as it is political. Farmers such as Rolando Manfredini, who raises fodder for cattle and sheep in the mountainous Modena Apennines region, have seen worries about the herbicide steadily rising across Italy for years. Vineyard operators, fruit and vegetable growers, cereal grain producers, and ranchers have started casting a more wary eye on the weed killer. In a country renowned for both natural beauty and fresh, wholesome foods, growers fear that glyphosate residues are a shadow over both human health and the vitality of the soil and water. "Farmers are very worried about the safety of this chemical," said Manfredini, who oversees food safety issues for Coldiretti, the country's main farmers' organization. Coldiretti, founded in 1944, counts among its members more than 1.5 million farmers and a number of Italian companies engaged in agriculture. "Italy has leadership in terms of food safety. Italian farmers are very concerned about its residues, for their health, but also for consumers and the environment." Cancer statistics show that non-Hodgkin lymphoma, the type of cancer with the strongest link to glyphosate, is the 11th most common cancer in Europe, with approximately 93,500 new cases diagnosed in 2012. And incidence rates of the cancer in men are higher in Italy than in all the rest of Europe. Italy's Ministry of Health placed several restrictions on the use of glyphosate in the late summer of 2016, banning it in areas frequented by the public, especially places where children or elderly people might gather. In addition to parks and gardens and areas around schools, the chemical was banned along roads and railways and in areas adjacent to healthcare facilities. The Ministry of Health also said the pre-harvest use of glyphosate would not be allowed. Even though Canadian and U.S. farmers had made the practice common, on wheat, for instance, or on oats in Canada, spraying crops with glyphosate shortly before they are harvested was deemed too risky for consumers in Italy because of the residues that remained on finished foods. The package of restrictions marked one of the widest bans on both consumer and agricultural use of the controversial chemical. Andrea Ferrante, a leader within the Italian organic farming movement and former head of the Italian Association for Organic Agriculture, Associazione Italiana per l'Agricoltura Biologica, said organic farming enthusiasts are encouraged to see the tide turning against glyphosate. "Even many conventional farmers who have been using glyphosate are trying to move away from it, including winemakers in Tuscany, a region famed for production of top wines. There is quite a movement giving evidence on how harmful glyphosate can be," Ferrante said. "We have so much scientific data, so much research about its cancer origin activity, that it's also easy for us to explain to the rest of the world why it is so harmful for the environment and human health." Chapter 10. When Weeds Don't Die, But Butterflies Do. History has shown that proving a specific chemical causes cancer is a long road that can leave countless lives in limbo for decades while the science is sorted out. But when it comes to the impact a certain chemical can have on the environment, often the evidence is easier to see, In fact, sometimes it is impossible to miss. I encountered my first superweed in 2011 and was both impressed and a bit horrified by the stature and strength of the towering stalks. I have been hearing farmers complain about weed problems, but I didn't truly appreciate the magnitude of the concern until that hot August afternoon.